Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Phoenix Pub. Please welcome a man who's probably best known for all the work he does helping Ukrainian refugees. It's Richard Herring! Hello! Hello, my fan friends! Thank you very much. Welcome, thank you for coming along. Welcome to Richard Herring's London Says Ta-ra podcast. It's the last Rahalastapa in London for... Until September, back at the Leicester Square Theatre, September through November, most Mondays. Come along and see us. There'll be some amazing guests. I don't know who they are yet, but they're going to be great. Though I was talking to Daffy, Jinx, Mr. Blue Nips, Flurg, Spunk Guzzler, Tony G, Simon Harris, Dorothy Perkins and Kenko, better known as the Blazing Squad. They were the Blazing Squad. They call it Rahalastapa. So I don't know if that's gonna catch on. The Ukraine thing. This week I was included in a tweet from Lesya Vasilenko, who's a Ukrainian MP. She doesn't follow me on Twitter. I wasn't expecting her to include me in a tweet. She said, "Every nation that welcomes war-displaced Ukrainians is making a contribution to preventing Russia's genocide of Ukrainian national." Grateful today to the UK for their new policy allowing unaccompanied children to seek refuge in the UK at Priti Patel, at Michael Gove, at Herring 1967. I don't like to talk about the work I do for Ukrainian refugees, but what was my Twitter? I couldn't work out what my Twitter handle was doing. Lesya, perhaps unsurprisingly, doesn't follow me. And whilst I'm supportive of the people of Ukraine, I've not been working with the government to help unaccompanied children seek refuge here. I do work with the government, but only on the most evil and despicable policies. So I'm disgusted to see myself associated with something that might be seen as doing good, as I'm sure Priti and Michael are as well.
I never really anticipated my name being mentioned in the same breath as Priti Patel and Michael Gove, unless my plan for a Guy Fawkes-style atrocity ever came to fruition. So it's... I would tweet her back and ask her why I was included. I think she might have more important issues to deal with, but I'm racking my brain to think, you know, she must have tweeted me by accident. I'm trying to work out who she meant to tweet, but I can't think of anyone in the government whose Twitter handle starts H-E-R-R. I don't think Herr Hitler has a Twitter account. He was involved with the Rwanda policy. I do know that. That's all I know. Bit of political satire there. Anyway. I'm saying the Tories are like Nazis. It's good. Quite clever. Quite clever. Hey, this is just to you people in the room. We're doing one more show here in London, which isn't a Rahalastapa. Thank you. Which is going to be another episode, live episode of Twitch of Fun, which is a show I do with puppets and my bollock puppet. But I'm also going to be doing the first new stand-up I've done for about 4 or 5 years, which is for my new podcast, Can I Have My Ball Back?, which will be out in the autumn, to go alongside a book of that name. So if you want to come along to that, either go and buy a ticket from the links on my website. If you want to, after the show, I'll just be sitting up here and I can sell you tickets and take your name. And it's the 11th of July, if you can make it to this same venue. I'd love to see you here. I'm also going to be selling copies of my books, Emergency Questions, Would You Rather, and The Problem with Men, if you would like to buy one of those. Yeah, The Problem with Men. The problem is we're just too brilliant. That's the problem. You'll find out. It gives you the answer of when International Men's Day is, but I'm not going to tell you. Have to buy a book to find out. So I'll just be sitting up here. If you want to come and say hello, that you can. But I want to go home as well. So don't. I don't mind if you don't come up. Right. I don't mind if you don't come up, but, you know, come up if you want. Right, my guest this week is probably best known for her appearance on Big Brother's Bit on the Side. Actually true for this. Actually true. We please welcome the amazing Meryl O'Rourke, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Hello, darling. Come in, sit down. Oh, you can turn your back up. Oh. Oh, I find it hard to get up on these...
These stools are horrible.
I find it very difficult.
I actually can't.
Yeah, good. Do you want to... I've got on mine now and I'm not getting off. There we go.
Oh, gee. And now I'm spinning. See, well, yeah, the podcast people won't understand, but...
It's fine.
Yeah, it's like being in... I feel like I'm in stirrups. I would like to cross my legs in a ladylike way, but I will fall off the stool. So there,
good.
You're going to get full split beaver in the front row. So there we go. It's the only way I can stay on the stool.
That's why Andy McCaich is here. That's what he's after.
There we go. I split my trousers... Just leaving the house.
Did you?
And it was like, oh God, I don't have time to change. But we were like, well, I'm going to be sitting down. Nobody will see it. I didn't realise that I was going to be splayed for you.
Yeah.
So I do apologise.
Nothing to apologise for. Tell us all about Big Brother's Bit on the Side.
Well, I was thinking, like, how difficult is it going to be for Richard to find the most obscure credit for possibly the most obscure guest you've had? Like even if he put my best known, most recent credit, nobody would know what the fuck it was either. So it was, well, yes, I actually really liked Big Brother,
yeah,
which meant that I couldn't be a guest for ages because the producers would look down on me for actually enjoying the show.
Right.
And I knew the producer of the sidekick show, like all the way when it was on Channel 4, and we'd go and have dinner and stuff, and he just kept saying to me, Meryl, you're not famous. And I was like, oh, okay. And then it got moved to Channel 5, and the minute it got moved to Channel 5, he phoned me and said, you're famous enough for Channel 5. That was literally how I got on.
This just worked the way through the phone book for Channel 5. They'd finally got to the O's. Good. Who was? I didn't even watch the channel. Who was? Was it celebrity or was it?
No, it was real Big Brother, right. And there was a guy called. I don't even remember. I remember there were twins. There were some overweight twins who were very opinionated and kept telling everybody, "Oh, you seem really moody today. You seem really happy today." And I said, "It must be like living with your ovaries." So that's one of the only jokes I remember.
Okay.
There was a celebrity. I did two series. There was a celebrity one as well because there was some Essex guy on there who was being quite romantic. And I remember saying, he kept saying he wanted to take a woman away for a romantic weekend. And I said, I think his idea of a romantic weekend would be anal sex in centre parks. And then I didn't even realise, apparently, that centre parks is a euphemism for anal sex. So we just wrote that joke. going, oh, this sounds pretty tacky. But there's a whole Mum's Net thread that apparently if your husband says to you, I want to take you up Centre Parks, he means anal.
I mean, is it in the centre? I don't know. Is the anus in the centre? I'd say that's vaginal sex. For the centre, well, I mean, technically, I would say...
Directly in the centre, I would say, is perineal.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't
or belly
know how
button,
much...
maybe. I don't know what is halfway down.
Isn't the perineum just by dint of what it is? Like, isn't that... its whole point is to be in the middle,
it's definitely the centre of the genitals and the anus, but I'm talking about the centre of the whole human body. And I think that might be the belly button.
Isn't that the soul?
I'm prepared to try all orifices to find, until we hit the right one. And it feels...
You've not even been married that long, have you? Not even. I've been married for 23 years, so we're probably going to venture into another orifice at some point.
Yeah. I've been married for 10 years, but that's in Richard Herring years, which are like seven. So I've been married for 70 years, I would say, for me. Look, Meryl, you are, I mean, people might not know who you are, but you are a fantastic stand-up comedian.
I feel awkward because I know I'm not meant to talk about. So basically, there has been no other podcast recorded tonight. I know I'm the only podcast being recorded tonight, but there is something about being in an audience who I like to kid myself had come for me, but you are all wearing T-shirts with the other guest who wasn't filmed tonight, recorded tonight. And it's like, and because I was here, I know why you're all wearing T-shirts saying cunt. If I hadn't been here, I could have fooled myself that they were just my demographic.
It'd be quite bad if they were people come see you and wearing T-shirts saying cunt. I mean, that would be quite a difficult audience to get round.
I don't know. I think that is my demographic.
Yeah, maybe.
But it is a bit like, I do have some fans, but none of them are fucking here. Even the man who tweeted you and said it would be my dream for you to get Meryl O'Rourke on Rahulistipa isn't fucking here.
I mean, they're not my fans because they're not shouting out Rahulistipa.
He did in the front.
Those five are mine. They were always coming. But I first met you and when you would come to Lee and Herring shows, there was a little gaggle. I was just talking about this with Margaret Caborn Smith, actually, about she was saying when you were, you know, when you, she has a podcast about crushes on people and stuff like that. And she was asking, she was claiming that me and Stu were on, you know, we were. Like a boy band, and that we had lots of.
You're going to ask me if I had a crush on you.
I'm not going to ask you that.
Very awkward.
I was saying to the people who followed us around were generally kind of quite clever, quite sort of slightly damaged people who we were quite avuncular to because they would come around and you'd followed us around a little. You came to gigs a little bit.
I followed you around a little. Yeah. And was I with my mum or not? I can't remember if you were before my mum died.
I think it was before your mum died, yes.
She was a Lee and Herring fan.
Yeah.
I was, I will confess, more of a Stuart Lee fan. Yes. And I'm sorry about that, but if you will hang around with Stuart Lee, like, you know, it's like fish and chips. Like, people aren't really there for the fish, to be honest. You were the fish to Stuart Lee's chips. But these are your fans. They're very into battered slime. But, no, we would go and see as much comedy as possible. And I did. And then the first time I remember properly speaking to you was I was doing... an open spot in the middle of a Lee and Herring gig to audition for an Avalon New Act competition.
Oh, yes.
And either nobody turned up or I think there'd been a small incident in the student union and they had to cancel the gig.
Right.
So you just told them that I was good anyway and I got into the heat. And then after that, so there's always been this weird thing with you and me because I would come to Club Zarathustra to sort of hang out with you guys. So I got into the gang. But I was never quite in the gap. I always was a crossover of fan and friend.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So I never quite knew what I was, apart from the fact that I wasn't properly welcome. I wasn't properly welcome, but I was welcome. And I'm not sure if... I mean, somebody must have told me where they were having an Indian meal every week. So I did used to turn up.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And you didn't like me, so this feels a bit weird as well. So I think I've spent more of the 25 years of us knowing each other with feeling like you didn't like me.
Oh,
so no, I don't mean it in a bad way. I wasn't really that upset about it, to be honest.
Okay. I didn't.
Stuart Lee liked me. I didn't need him.
I didn't. I didn't not like you. I don't think I had strong feelings either way.
I think I was relatively irrelevant. I was kind of, I mean, you know, this is what a shallow person I am. I was quite good friends with Peter Bainham at the time. So what we'd do is a big gang of us, you were filming, was it Fist of Fun?
Yeah, it probably would be.
Right. So a big gang of us used to go and watch the filming every week and then we'd all go out for an Indian at the end. And Peter liked me. And also, I was generally popular in my 20s because I drove everywhere. So nobody would speak to me all evening. And then at the end of the evening, someone would go, "Oh, are you driving? You're my best friend." So I remember driving Peter. The only time I went to your house that I remember is I was driving Peter Bainham home, who was living with you at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was not very happy. He was going through a bit of a bad phase. And because you would bully him in the show, sometimes he got a little bit, I'm not sure where the show finishes and us being in the kitchen. So I remember going to your house and there being a big party in the kitchen with you. But I was in Peter Bainham's bedroom listening to him be really upset about stuff. And the next day there was all this kind of like, oh, Meryl went to Rich's house and I think he'd just been through a break. Oh, Meryl went to Rich's house and he's just been through a breakup. That was really I'd literally just sat in Peter Bainham's bedroom listening to him complaining about the rising damp that Richard would do nothing about.
It wasn't mine. It was a both of our shared flats.
I don't remember. But this is how shallow I am, is that Peter doesn't speak to me on Twitter and you do, so okay. Fuck him.
You know who lived upstairs? Who's yeah. Someone who's given a quote for your show. Terry Johnson lived in the flat above us, the playwright
oh, wow.
Terry Johnson. So and his washing machine flooded one time and soaked and flooded our flat.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry on behalf of Terry.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'll let him know next time.
But
I'm
that's quite.
There.
That's sort of quite. I mean, it's quite. It's just coincidental, and it was just a fairly regular. We were renting. I think he bought upstairs.
Okay.
But it wasn't like a very sumptuous area. It was just a regular sort of Victorian terrace. Right. So it's quite unusual to get three writers living in this. I mean, two of them have gone on to be extremely successful. Terry was pretty successful at the time. Yeah. But one of them's writing big movies.
Yeah.
I won't let you know which one it is. Out of Peter Bain and Richard Herring. I'm sorry if he was felt like he was being... I love Pete, and I still do. He's a
oh,
nice
well, boy. I'm sorry if I've made it awkward.
No, it doesn't matter. I don't care.
I thought making it awkward might be funny, but it's not. It's just awkward.
He said he was delighted that my granddad had died, so, you know, he deserves everything he gets.
And he also called Frankenstein's monster Frankenstein in the Hotel Transylvania films, which I think is unforgivable, frankly. It's the point of the book. The point of the book is that he doesn't have a name and therefore is non-existent in the eyes of God. That's actually what is meant to be frightening about Frankenstein. It's actually the most frightening thing is meant to be that the monster doesn't have a name and therefore won't go to heaven.
Do you think that's the case for Hotel Transylvania so much? And to a lesser extent, Hotel Transylvania 2. She also wrote...
Oh, God, I can't remember their names, because I was going to say that the source material for... You know, there's a bunch of dolls that are all Frankenstein... See, this is... Yeah. Okay, it's not.
So, like, but reading about you... Well, there isn't a lot about you online, so I'm going to have to fill in the details. But you did a show in which you talked about... you were sort of... You as a teenager, you still talk to lots of celebrities on Twitter, and you followed quite a lot of... celebrities around as a teenager.
I did, yeah. I wrote a show about my mum taking me stalking.
Yes.
Which mainly stemmed out of a therapy session where I was talking to my therapist about how guilty I felt that when I was about 16, I would drive to celebrities' houses and sit outside them. And she pointed out to me that I probably wouldn't have been driving when I was 16. And I then realised that my mother used to take me driving to sit outside... Relatively, we were very into Radio 4 comedy, so like people who contributed to Spitting Image, I would be sitting outside their houses, staring at their bins. And I think my mum thought it was a kind of a like Houses of the Rich and Famous, like in Los Angeles when you go around in a limo. But I was just sitting outside, you know, somebody who'd been in one episode of The Young Ones. And we would take like sandwiches and get a nice coffee from a cafe. So it's like sightseeing, but with an underlying feeling of illegal menace.
Yeah. Were you, because like, well, I remember like passing like Robbie Williams' house would have been sort of Notting Hill, and there'd be people outside and there'd be graffiti. Were you on your own? Was it just you and your mum, or were there other people there?
It's allowed when it's a pop star.
Yeah.
Like people are One Direction, they're all like, oh, we've got loads of fans and my mum will bring... It's allowed it's a pop star, but when you do it outside the house of somebody with a Radio 4 series, it's weird, apparently. It's odd. So no, it was just us. And it is an odd thing to do. Like I didn't realise that it would be frightening for those people because my mum just took me, and she had normalized it. But it is a bit like, it's a bit like going on safari. It's like, you know, I love zebras, so I'm going to hunt them down and terrify them in their natural habitat. So, yeah, it's something I feel a bit awkward about. Did you ever feel stalked by me?
No, I don't think, but you know, I don't think so. Yeah, I didn't realise you were sitting in Pete Bainham's bedroom noting down everything that was happening. But no, I, but you know, there was sort of, it was interesting. The kind of people who we attracted to, with Lee and Herring were kind of, there was a lot. I just remember the people who hung around were, there was a lot of people with, it felt like a vulnerability there, which I didn't mind at all. It was just sort of, it was not what people might have expected from the showbiz lifestyle. But I was equally, you know, I was quite an isolated, lonely figure through that decade anyway. So I was spending a lot of time at home. I'd probably quite liked you to be hanging around outside my house. You could have come in and had a cup of tea, sorry, and I would have been on my own.
I'll do it now if you
okay,
want.
Okay, that's
just
fine.
Give me your address.
It's I can't have so much. You can come and babysit. Me and my wife can go out. That would be good. Maybe, maybe I don't want you looking after.
I don't even want to be with my kids.
Maybe not.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You've seemed very friendly with Robin Asquith from the Confessions.
Well, yeah, film. I mean, that's the thing. There's this weird crossover with me where I would be very, very fangirly with somebody. And then Twitter was invented, and there are a lot of people I thought would actually be quite frightened of me who've actually been, oh, you're that girl that always turned up. I was always there with my mum as well, so people sort of remembered me a bit weirdly. Most weren't scared. No. And one odd thing about me and Richard were just saying that I still look roughly the same as I did when I was 20. I don't know what's happened there. It's a bit odd. But what the downside of that is that I will go to celebrity parties with people who I now work with, and they'll be, I remember Stephen Fry at the Sony Awards. I went over to say hello to him and he went, oh, what are you doing here? He remembered me being that crazy girl with my mum. Robin Asquith, my mother was very into the Confessions films and she was a very sex positive feminist in the 70s. So she would show me the Confessions films like when I was 10, which is incredibly inappropriate. And then we would go and see Robin Asquith and things, and she would go, here's my child, and he would feel really awkward. And I remember giving him laryngitis once, not through anything, like nothing U-tree-ish, I was just talking to him. But my favourite Robin Asquith thing was that, because I really love the Confessions films, and sometimes he tweets me because I see them from a feminist perspective of all the women in them have a lot of sexual agency. He's always the one that's being seduced rather than seducing, and he quite likes that I've forgiven him for his whole career. And I was interviewing him for the radio once, and we started talking about tattoos, and I've got a tattoo on my hip, and I tried to undo my skirt to show him it. And he pretended to fall on me while I was undoing my skirt and was saying, blimey, blimey. And it was the best moment of my life. It was literally, I was in heaven. So, yes, I love Robin.
But, you know, the people who liked Leon Herring and followed us around, like one of them, and wrote to us all. We got loads of people who wrote to us. And it was quite, and it was this, you know, it was, I mean, we were only a little, I mean, I'm only a little tiny bit older than you, but there were like, there were people, like teenagers, you know, 40 and 50 year olds, but like people who'd write to us every week and that, but they've turned out to be really interesting people. A lot of them, one of them is my wife's best friend who was a comedian and is now an author. But she's, you know, we wrote to her because we felt, we get these quite intense letters from her, but we obviously, our show meant something to her. And she was obviously bright, but she was obviously having some trouble. But, you know, it helped her through, and she turned out to be a really interesting, really funny person. So I think that happened to us quite a lot. There weren't that many fans of us.
I think you get inducted quite a lot. So my mum took me to a lot of comedy from when I was even... Like, when I was a child, I would go to see Sooty and Sweep, and I count that absolutely, you know, that they were just a small cloth Morecambe and Wise, Sooty and Sweep.
I was a comedy fan, and I think... Comedy, probably more than music, attracts people who are sort of interested in... I think it's not as sexy as following a band. It's not as sexy as following Robbie Williams. Probably people who are following Robbie Williams are hoping to have sex with them. I think most people...
Stuart Lee was quite sexy in his day.
In his day.
I was hoping to have sex with Stuart Lee.
I even bought...
That first gig we did together, I had a comic with me. Simply because I thought Stuart Lee would find that attractive. So I sat backstage pretending to read a comic.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. He helped me.
He helped me write my mother. Yeah, well, I was alone with him. My mum died and he helped me write her eulogy. And I was alone with him at a point where I was
What a time to try and get off with her. So a young woman, what a time. What a moment to choose.
He did. I would have been very open to it. I was vulnerable and alone. But no, he played hard to get, bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, he was quite nice back then. In those days. But look, your latest stand-up show, I didn't see your previous show where you did talk about this, which was called, you can remind me what it was called.
Bad Mother,
yeah. So, but Vanilla.
It was about stalking Radio 4 celebrities and escaping the Holocaust.
Yeah, so it was quite
a broad show.
Yeah, so, I mean, that puts some context into your mother.
Well, that was why it happened, because people would say to me, why have you written a show about the Holocaust? That's a bit needy. And it was actually that I was writing stuff about my mum being weird, and I didn't like it. The audience would go, oh my God, your mum's so weird. Like, your mum's just so mental. Oh my God, you must have hated your mum. And I thought, well, actually, she was weird because she escaped the Holocaust. And so I put that in. Her first memory was being dangled out of a window over a bonfire at the age of 4 by Nazis. Don't know if I had to add that. I don't know how familiar you are with the Holocaust. But yeah, so that meant that she was inappropriate and she drove me everywhere, and she was fascinated with film and entertainment because it took her out of herself.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, you know, that explains a lot. The latest show, which you've recorded quite recently.
Yeah, it's so on Next Up.
Next Up, called Vanilla, and it's, you know, again, you can Next Up's a very interesting platform in which they're kind of giving a platform for a lot of newer, well, not necessarily newer, but not necessarily the big name comedians.
But that was what was really nice for me is like, I'm 51 and I've just recorded my first special.
Yeah,
and it was really nice that their door was still open to some old hag that's still trying, still clawing at the door at this late stage.
But yeah, but the, you know, I think it's sort of refreshing. I mean, there are plenty of middle-aged comedians, but there aren't quite so many middle-aged female comedians, and it is quite refreshing to see that's at least there's a lot of men, I think,
who have
kept on going on the circuit.
Yeah,
and they're either like female comedians either weren't there years ago, which you were mm-hmm. amongst the first, I guess, of the new alternative comedians.
No, we weren't. Like, first was Hattie Hayridge and Jenny Eclair and things like that, and the people
Second
I would
wave.
Go and see. Well, our generation, which was kind of... I'm sort of gulping at saying the Spice Girls generation because we were too old, but they very much heralded a time where women could wear very tight clothes and be very sexual and be very laddie. And so our generation, somebody pointed out to me once when I was having one of my bitter rants on Twitter about how I'd never fucking made it, that actually none of the women of my generation made it. So there are a lot of us around. Karen Bailey, Susan Murray, Jojo Sutherland, Sally Ann Hayward, all people that have never made it onto television or Radio 4. But we were very open and upfront, and I don't think the circuit was quite ready for women to be like that.
Well, I found the 90s wasn't my cup of tea, and it felt a very male. It's despite being sort of right on in the 80s, being right on the 90s, felt very much like a lot of men being quite alpha. I think quite a lot of alpha males. So I didn't really feel I fitted into the circuit.
Yeah. I felt like
I fitted more into the circuit that of 2005 onwards, you know, partly because I think a few people have been influenced by the TV shows we did. And so, you know, it kind of felt like it was more that, but it was a bit more welcoming to women. But what's interesting
now, though, because now that the younger ones are coming up, there's this big movement now. So the very modern, very political young female comics think that talking very openly about sex is a very politically forward thing to do, which I always did. But when I was younger, talking very openly about sex, people were like, oh, God, this isn't very tasteful. You'll never get into Edinburgh. So I do now hang around with the younger, the kind of Joe McNally's and the Olga Cox, and I'm almost seen as sort of an elder slut. So even though Vanilla has been written by a woman in her early 50s, it actually fits very well with the oeuvre of modern female comedy, who are talking about, well, hang on a minute, we want to be very sexual, but society's still not quite ready for that yet.
But also, all the people you mentioned from your generation have worked for 20 or 30 years as stand-ups,
and are
all absolutely fantastic stand-ups. And that's what's kind of noticeable, you know, to see someone, you know, it's weird, it's not your first special, but it's your first film special. It's not your first one-person show, but it's your first film one. And it's, you know, and it's really great, and you kind of go, oh my goodness, there's somebody who most people won't know doing this interesting show that's very accomplished, apart from a bit where a light falls, a projector falls
into the audience, almost decapitating the man at the front.
That's the only bit that doesn't seem very professional, but it's pretty good.
Yeah,
so you should keep that in.
Okay, we'll try. The guy who nearly gets decapitated as well, he comes to a lot of my gigs apart from this fucking one. And apparently a light had fallen on him at another one of my gigs as well, really? So he is taking it very personally. But yeah, I do think of it as a feminist show, but we didn't purposely murder a man. like, oh, it's a proper feminist show, the bloodied corpse of men strewn across the stage.
But, you know, you've got all those years. I mean, you've been working with Frankie Boyle, for example, for a long. You've been writing as a program associates on a lot of things that
he actually, well, that are 13 odd years on and off, and actually the program associate thing is a little in joke, because a lot of shows don't credit writers as writers in Britain. In America they're fine, everyone knows everyone's got writers, here they're a bit shy of it. But Frankie is actually very keen to have the word writer, and New World Order is one of the only shows where we are billed as writers, and we don't have to kind of hide it and be secretive about it. So, yeah, that's been a really great relationship. I'm pretty much Frankie's bitch, really. He sort of owns me.
Yeah, but you work with him a lot.
Make all my money from Frankie. I am an absolute Frankie succubus.
Yeah, but that's a real vote of confidence in your, obviously, in your gag writing, because, you know, Frankie's very, you know, I think a comedian that I haven't always got on with him. I've always gotten on with him, but he doesn't like me. But
this is going to be like being between two divorcing parents, isn't it?
I don't care, but I like him, and I think he's a great comedian. There we go. But you know, if he's taking your gags, then that's a real vote of confidence, because he's also very, you know, he wouldn't do crap jokes. You know, I think, like, sometimes you have a writer, you have a comedian with writers, and you kind of go, oh, they're kind of those guys will give you a lot of hack lines that they probably wouldn't do themselves, or that they've just. But with you, I think it's a real vote of confidence for your.
Yes, and I have to remind myself of that sometimes. Yeah. I have to say, you know, you write for this top comedian. He's kept you on for 13 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's one of the amazing things about him actually crediting me as writer, because, like, my IMDb used to have about 2 credits, because when you're a program associate and stuff, you're actually not allowed to put it. And one day, a few years ago, I wrote him a very long letter kind of saying, it'd be really nice for me if I actually had some credits, some people knew I'd done something with my life. And he was always fine with it. His agent was a bit off with it, his old agent. And now, just the fact that I'm able to say I have been writing with Frankie Boyle for 13 years has completely changed my outlook on me and my career. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, I saw myself as an utter failure. And now I see myself as having accomplished something, even if it's not getting any of my fucking fans in this audience. So I'm on some kind of treadmill going towards some kind of respect.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of... what I like with this show is, you know, the variety of comedians we can get on, and you can get big names on, and you can get people who people might not have heard of who are good. But, you know, there's a lot of people in the same position, right? That have worked the circuit for decades, but who are fantastic, have got like fantastic at the job. And, you know, as a comedy fan have to kind of find them yourself, either by getting out there.
There's a big circuit out there, and there's loads of incredibly funny comedians who haven't been picked up by the telly for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting during lockdown, like people saying, you know, oh, comedians not being funded because comedians are all very left-wing, and that's why the government aren't giving them furlough and stuff. But actually, the actual circuit is very centrist, because we go all around the country, we have to entertain, like, there's a bit in August where I've got a weekend where one day I'm at a really hippie festival, and then the next day I'm in a holiday camp like in Leeds, and I have to entertain both crowds. So you can't be too extreme, because you just can't bond with every crowd that you meet.
Yeah. So how was lockdown for you, though? Because, like, for, again, everyone on the stand-up circuit, it was like you had work booked in and then it just stopped, and then you had to cope for like 6 months or so at least without any gigs.
I loved it, but that's because because of being on the circuit, I spend most weekends on the motorway, and I actually got to get to know my children. It's like, oh, this is what it's like. It was quite odd, actually, because I would have these weird feelings of just being completely unwanted, and the family weren't appreciating me enough. And then I realized that I was used to every weekend for the past 20 years, hundreds of people would clap for me whenever I walked on stage. And suddenly I'd walk into a room and my family wouldn't even look up from Rummy Cup. And so I said this to them. I said, this is really odd for me. So then they got into a habit of applauding when I came into the room, just so mummy wouldn't start cutting herself. So I liked being with the kids, and I was, you know, I was lucky enough financially, as I've said, you know, my mum's dead, so I've got a house. And that was, you know, it's what kept us going, really, the fact that we didn't have rent. And I did a lot of stuff online. I did, I didn't do content as such. I find it very difficult to produce content, because what I usually do on stage, I do quite a lot of crowd work. So I was doing online gigs. And actually, the only content that did go a bit viral was when I got angry with the traffic outside my house and I started shouting at cars. And I suddenly realized, oh my God, this is my equivalent to crowd work. This is literally, I was doing heckle put downs to cars going out past the house. So, yeah, I think that was the MC in me, just desperate to MC something. So I MC'd the traffic.
Yeah, good. And I like the fact that, again, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, you've been married for over 23 years, and you've got two kids of you know, one's nearly grown up.
I acquired a 16-year-old this weekend, which has been very interesting.
That's on top of your other kids.
It's only £5 a week.
They get older, don't they? So it's weird. They should just stay the same age. It would be much easier. But so, you know, but you talk about your family, and you're very open and honest about your family, and, you know, it's... You know, and the difference, I suppose, Vanilla is partly about that, the difference between the time you were single, which is basically the 1990s.
Yeah, when I had most of my sex, which was now the last century.
and how the world is now, you know, but not just for you, but for the way dating's changed.
Yeah, because I don't count as a slut anymore. Like, I was considered a slut in my 20s, and now my daughter calls me repressed. And it's quite confusing, because nothing I did has changed. So everything I did is still there, but it just doesn't count as slutty anymore. You know, I was a slut one person at a time in private using only my vagina, which, you know, that's just a boring weekend for millennial now. So I really, you know, if anybody young is in the... I mean, there's nobody young in the audience here, but anybody young listening... from somebody...
There's clearly no young people listening. No. You're young.
You seem relatively young.
Yeah. How old are you?
Did you have sex in the last century?
28. She's 20. That's young.
Well, I doubt she would have had sex in the last century. I mean, I don't want to ask, because if she has, it'd be a very different podcast. Be even less laughs than I'm already getting. But maybe we could divert it. But yeah, it's been quite strange now. My daughter's always like, "What are you? Like, what even are you?" I go, "I don't even know what that means." She's like, "Well, you know, are you subbed on by Leather Ace?" I'm going, "I don't know." We weren't like in the 90s. We were just somebody in a room waiting for sex. That was it. Whether you were gay or straight, like your sexual identity was just up for it or not up for it. That was it. And now they have this little sort of, in your Insta bio, you can say all your sexual proclivities.
Yes.
And get it delivered to you.
Yeah, it must be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas we just all bundled in whatever we could get.
It's true. It's true. It was, you know, that's what I think of them. I would have loved something like even a bit like Tinder in the 1990s, because I just, you know, just a friend Tinder, I would have liked.
Yeah, I know.
That you could just say, "I'm not doing anything tonight. Do you want to go for a drink?" Yeah, don't tell anyone about this. Just be my friend. Yeah. Please be my friend. But we, and in the show you talk, which we talked about a bit about last week, I talked about Katy Perry, but you talk about music and how it affects your...
Over-sexualized pop star.
Yeah, which is, it is a sort of... It's a weird thing. Do you think it's just that we're old, and when we were young, we thought our parents were square for not... It is different, though. The things you talk about, we would never have been in songs when we were kids.
And I find it hilarious as well. A lot of our generation don't keep up. So, like I was saying, I like the Confessions films. I'm on some Confessions films and Carry On films Facebook pages. And every now and then one of them will post, "Oh, you wouldn't be allowed to have Barbara Windsor. Wouldn't be allowed to have a bra fall off now." And I'm like, there is literally a number one single called Wet Ass Pussy. Literally. It's quite odd. And yeah, my daughter's friends... You know, we're all dancing around going, "Oh, wet ass pussy." And my daughter's friends were dancing around at school singing "Spit in My Mouth for My Wet Ass Pussy" when they were like 14. And I don't think it's us being prudish. I think it wasn't quite that direct. Because I do look back that there were sexual songs when we were kids. And like, Prince was around when I was a kid. And Prince was happy to play for adults. Like, he was happy to do all that wriggling around and rude stuff for adults. He didn't feel the need to have a child demographic as well.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you say, with Katy Perry, like in the video for Birthday, she's literally a children's entertainer and a stripper writhing around an old man's lap in the same video.
Well, it's interesting. And also it's interesting in the show you talk about the difference. Well, like pornography in the 90s. I mean, people, the way things have changed with pornography is just so astonishing. And you can't... You know, even I'd sort of forgotten that it was...
Young people can't get their heads around it.
I can't quite get my head around it.
I even mentioned one, especially, I don't know if it was different for a man, but, like, I would probably see a porn film maybe once a year.
Yeah.
And people like so we found a 28-year-old. In the 90s, like, so when I was in my early 20s, how do you think I would have seen a porn film?
A magazine?
A film. So then they always say a magazine, like people say in a bush and stuff. But yeah, there was one woman once, I said, you know, how do you think? And she said, well, surely they didn't have porn films until the internet. And you're going, honestly, like, you know, 1895, I think they invented a film camera and shoved it up someone's skirt. They've always been around. But it is, you know, do you have any concept of even how we would have gotten hold of a film? No, it's not. It's baffling. And the other thing...
I know
thing,
you know, David. You were there getting it. You know, no one's asking you how you got it. No, we don't want to buy a VHS tape, yeah?
Yeah. So yeah. No.
You'd rent a tape from the newsagent. We'd have some porn. He'd have E.T. and some porn.
Yeah, but it wasn't even proper porn. Because no. It was illegal. Penetrative porn was illegal back then. So it would be like just people rubbing each other and going, ooh. Like even now, if you watch Babe Station now and then, because they're not allowed to flash their doodahs. Like this is, you know, so there's labia on the Brits, but not on Babe Station. It's a really weird world. And you know, this has been the first time I've been interviewed about Vanilla where I've been able to say the words wet ass pussy.
Yeah.
Which my friends, my daughter's 13-year-old friends were saying at school. But yeah. Adult radio shows, I can't say it. So yeah, on Babe Station, when they have to rub themselves, they rub their bellies to pretend they're masturbating because they're not allowed to rub their doodahs.
Right.
So yeah, that was how it was. And so what tended to happen was you'd go to a party and part of the invite to the party would be Graham is bringing his porn. And... Yeah, an audience full of Grahams, basically. Great. The thing is, though, Graham wasn't anybody's friend. He was just somebody that someone knew who'd been to Germany. And so he'd be in a room with the porn, and you'd go in the room to look at the porn. And then young people got upset. Oh, and so did you all start having group sex? And no, no, you went in the room and laughed at the porn and then you left. And the only person staying in there was Graham, kind of minding his porn. Like you'd hired a bouncy castle or something. It's a different world now. Now, you know, kids watch it on their phone on the way to school.
Yeah. I can't, you know, I've got aphantasia and I can't. Which means I can't form mental images in my head.
About a porn video.
No,
then.
I don't have any mental images, right? So I don't understand how I used to masturbate.
Oh.
But maybe I used to be able to form mental images. I mean, I can sort of have gotten, you know, I can have an idea, but I can't see anything. So it's really good there's pornography now.
Yeah, no.
But I did masturbate a lot. I just don't know. I can't. Maybe I masturbated so much that I broke my imagination. I don't know.
Maybe.
I didn't realise until lockdown that I couldn't see mental images, and it was only someone pointing out that that was possible that I thought, it's not me. And then I realised I can't.
Okay.
I can't see anything in my brain.
I have a bit too much narrative when I wank. Yeah. And sometimes I actually have to stop if the conversation with the other person's got awkward. So actually, like, all right, let's wipe the hand off and have a discussion about the last time you took me to dinner.
Well, look, people should watch me. It's I mean, there is. I don't want to wreck the show and talk about it too much, but it does go on to talk about Me Too and you confronting. I mean, it's an interesting story because you yourself say it's sort of an in between. Story in a way that it's quite hard to categorize, right?
Yes.
What's gone on.
In a very early incarnation of the show, I did entertain vaguely getting the audience to vote on whether they considered that I had been raped or not. And then I thought that might get the wrong kind of publicity. because, yeah, there is, maybe I should have preceded that a bit more with what happened. There is a sexual assault in the show, which is one of those awkward in-betweeny, like, whose fault was it? Did this happen? Did that happen? Does it count? Does it not count? At which point did it count?
Yeah.
And that was why it was in the show, because I felt a lot of Me Too, a lot of the narrative around Me Too was just too linear. It was just, these people bad, these people good. We carry on now. And it's not that easy.
No, it's interesting for that. And, and I'm sure there'll be people who argue that, you know, well, it wasn't that bad, but it was that bad. So, I think it's interesting to talk about it. And you make the... I don't want to wreck the whole show.
I know, it's awkward because I mentioned a bit then forgetting that this audience didn't know the show and then they were suddenly like, because I'm really used to talking about it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, but I think it's great that people are talking about it. And the show's a funny show. And even around this subject, you're still finding the funny in it, and it's serious for a bit, and then it's still funny. But I think those conversations need to be had. I think it's interesting that you kind of talked to you confronted him and had a conversation about it with him.
That was pretty much why it went in the show.
Yeah.
Because at the time that wasn't even being discussed in Me Too. Me Too was either you keep it a secret or you throw it out to the general public, and I felt that throwing things out to the general public didn't feel safe. Not many of the women that were throwing things out to the general public seemed to have found a place of peace. And also, it had happened so long ago. It was 20, I can't remember now, because I lie about how long it was in the show. I lie because I don't want anybody being eager to kind of work out who it was. Because to me, that's one of the things I hate as well, is like, oh, well, here's this person. We'll remove this person from the industry and then we can all still share flats in Edinburgh and be in drunken car rides and have all these issues and they won't matter anymore. So I was very keen not for there to be anything identifiable in it. And I forgot what I was talking about now. That it was a long time ago and it felt really weird just blapping out this name without finding out if he was the same person. And I had a lot of clues as well, because he had been an alcoholic and he was no longer an alcoholic, and I had a lot of clues that he probably wasn't the same person. And I didn't want to throw someone to the wolves who had actually done everything they could to fix their lives.
Yeah.
But most of all, I mean, I was very careful all the way through doing the show not to use the word forgiveness, and then next up only film it once.
Yeah.
And it was the one time I used the word forgiveness. Fucking damn, I don't want people. But it was more about me. I wanted to be able to carry on with my life not being frightened of this person anymore. It was about my own empowerment, which, yes, might seem a bit selfish, but I think there was a lot of narrative around Me Too that we had to give out names because we had to warn other women. And one of the things I made sure of in the conversation, I tried to make sure that there hadn't been other victims, but also how much responsibility does the victim take on? I apparently had the responsibility of getting him to stop, which I didn't manage to do. And then you've got the responsibility afterwards of then trying to find all the other victims and round them up. And at what point does he have responsibility? And I was very keen for him to take that responsibility and to look me in the eye and to have that conversation.
Yeah, well, it's well worth watching, and it's on Next Up. So go and watch it, and I think that it'll all make sense.
I think I ease into it much more gently than I did with you guys.
But it's great that, you know, I think, like, because obviously you do a lot of sets and clubs, and you're fantastic. Mm-hmm. You're a brilliant, brilliant club comedian.
Thank you.
You know, and it's a difficult thing to do. You're very good off. You know, you're very good with an audience. You're very good with material. And you know, it's those years of doing it that make that. But it's doing an hour show is a different thing. And I know you've done a couple of hour shows, but it's interesting to take a show like that into a more serious place. Obviously, you did it with the other show as well, if you're talking about the Holocaust as well. So it's
somebody once said to me, Meryl O'Rourke sorts shit out. And that seems to be my USP. If you want me to try and sort out the Holocaust and sexual assault in an hour, done, dusted.
But I think again, just by talking about those things, it's, you know, with the Holocaust, it's educational.
My favourite review I've ever had, the Jewish Chronicle, my show Bad Mother, said there's long been a debate on whether you can make fun of the Holocaust, and Meryl O'Rourke has crashed through it with this show. And unfortunately, he didn't put it in a quotable way that was just Meryl O'Rourke is the funniest person talking about the Holocaust. But to have the Jewish Chronicle, of all people, say, yes, we're okay with this show.
Yeah,
she deals with it well. It was a huge badge of honour.
And you're half Irish and half Jewish.
Yes, half Irish Catholic, half German Jewish. Every time I see Liam Neeson in a film, he's leading my people to freedom. Every time.
Is that because we talked about nuns in the backstage interview? Did your childhood lean one way more than the other?
I was raised Jewish because basically, my dad was Catholic, and he divorced his first wife because she was pregnant with another man's child. But despite that, his dad still said, right, you're dead now. And the whole family were told that he died when actually he'd just married my mum,
okay.
Which is a bit of a diss, really, isn't it? And so I was raised Jewish because Catholicism was dead to him. But I do have, I mean, it's a shame because I've heard some really exciting things about my Irish granny, because she was one of the, she was at the Easter Rising. Like, she used to carry a pistol. She used to hang out with Michael Collins and Eamon De Valera. And I don't know more than that. And it would be lovely to know all my granny anecdotes.
Yeah.
But none of the Irish family is speaking. Well, most of them are dead now, I think. Like, really dead, not just marrying a Jew type dead.
It's out of all the religions to get together. I mean, they're two of the most sort of,
yeah.
So they're very serious about their religion.
It's
both
pretty
those
much
religions.
All guilt and potatoes. Either way, you fry the potato, you boil the potato, you're still going to hell. Yeah, well, that was actually what they'd had in common. They used to say, you know, the fact that my mum had escaped from the Holocaust and my dad was beaten almost every day. The thing that they had in common was that their religions absolutely terrified them. And it's one of the reasons I'm an only child was they were like, the world is shit, let's never have children. And then my mum got drunk in a tent one day and out I came. So, it's nice to know that you weren't wanted at all.
No child's wanted. No, that's not true. No child's wanted once you got them. You realise the terrible nightmare. No, I'm my kids are all right, you know, now. Most of the time, it's not too bad. Let's do some emergency questions.
Okay.
And let's try and make them not about rape or religion. What religion would you most like to be raped by? Oh, no.
It's my speciality. My husband's a Muslim as well, so we've got the whole selection box at home.
That's good. That is good. I hadn't thought of that. That is good. All right. If your genitals had to be replaced by the face of one of the Muppets...
Oh, my God.
...the face would be able to interact and communicate in exactly the same way as the puppet. Which Muppet face would replace your genitals?
Well, the thing is, Gonzo would be useful.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, like, you know, you could use Gonzo. He's basically a strap-on. Yeah. He's a strap-on with a hand up him.
Yeah.
So I could have Gonzo and still be sexually active.
Yeah.
So that would probably be it.
That's a good... That's
and
a good,
I would discover...
It wouldn't be much
to
fun to talk to, though. It would put you off when you... He's a slightly annoying. But, yeah, I think you're
well,
right.
Well, my vagina's slightly annoying as well.
Okay.
So...
You get some good information. I'm not going to tell him what it is. Let's let's leave some surprises. There's some good information about Meryl's genitalia.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I accidentally elbowed Denise Van Outen in the face on Channel 5's Celebrity Game Night. Yes, my career is going well. What is the worst injury you've directly or indirectly caused to a celebrity or person of renown?
Oh, blimey. I ran over Nick Berry and Leslie Grantham's feet.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I did extra work on EastEnders as a kid, and they wanted someone who could ride a bike, and I couldn't ride a bike. And my mum was like, it's EastEnders, say you can ride a bike. And so I was on this bike, but I actually couldn't ride a bike. So they were in the middle of a take and I ran over Nick Berry and Leslie Grantham and was sacked.
Wow. You were sacked for
I
that?
I was sacked.
That's cruel.
Well, I think it's an insurance problem when a teenager who can't ride a bike is careering into your leads.
Not as bad as what Leslie Grantham did, though, is it?
Yeah. We didn't know about that then. I could have snagged his cock on my bike bell and saved everybody.
I mean, he did a lot. He did a lot of bad things. You might have an answer to this, having toured for a lot of time. What's the worst experience you've ever had in a hotel?
Oh, well, the one that springs to mind, because I've got my mask on, so I still like wearing masks. I kind of like the privacy. And the thing is, this is the mask I wear at shows, because it's glamorous, it's gold. But I usually have lipstick on. And so what happens to the mask is it ends up looking like that inside. It's basically white inside with a great big red patch in the middle.
Yeah.
And so I was staying overnight at a bed and breakfast and I just chucked it on the bed. And I was, when I came back from my gig, the reception sort of took me aside, said, can we speak to you? And they were, we couldn't clean your room because you left a sanitary towel on the bed. and the cleaner was very upset. And yeah, it was just my mask with lots of lipstick on.
Well,
so.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Yeah, we did an Airbnb in Norfolk somewhere, and my son had a nosebleed, and then the Airbnb, like quite a bad one on the sheet and stuff. We thought we'd had him at home. And we thought they'd better clean it, and they got in touch to say they were going to charge us for a new sheet and a new. And I think they thought like a murder had happened or something. They were trying to find out what it was, and then I said, "Oh, it's just a nosebleed. I think it'll come." I think they thought it was like a period or something like that as well. Because they were saying we're going to charge you for all of this. They said, well, you can if you want, but have you tried washing it? Because it's just blood.
I went to a hotel recently. Well, I barely call it a hotel. And they'd had so many bad experiences with their towel that you could only use the towel for 10 minutes. So what had to happen is when you wanted to shower, you had to find the woman who ran. It wasn't even a bit of somebody's house that they'd just put rooms. You had to find her and say, I want to shower now. And she would give you the towel. And then after the shower, you weren't allowed to keep it. So she came knocking on the door and I was getting texts going, you've had the towel for 11 minutes. Please, can you give it back?
I feel like someone else has said this, but maybe I've heard you say this, but I don't think I ever have heard you say this, but then someone else must have said
it. I was tweeting about it.
Were you? Okay.
I was tweeting about it a lot, like I do with every single thing I ever do, because I'm a very lonely person who only exists on Twitter.
I feel like someone else has been at that hotel as well. I feel I've heard that, but maybe more hotels are, you know, you must get through a lot of towels if you're running a hotel.
That's part of the job, though. That's what I said to her. Yeah. It's part of your job. You don't want to run a hotel.
You can't have a towel on a... case by case basis.
I know, and they'd lowered the pressure in the tap so that when you turned the tap on, it barely came out. And they said that's because it was making the floor wet. And I was going, but that's just the nature of water. You don't want to be running a hotel if you can't deal with the natural process of what happens to water.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you know, don't run a hotel. That's the answer. Right, we'll go one more. Would you rather have a tit that dispenses talcum powder or a finger that can travel through time? I haven't asked that one for a while. Free talcum powder as much as you want for life. You're up for personal use, or a finger that could travel through time, and you can do things forwards or backwards.
The tit seems more obvious because the finger thing doesn't seem like it can't see. Can it? It's just my finger.
I think you can just peek through the hole. You can say where it's got to go. It's still attached to your fat hand, but only the finger will travel in time, and you can look through the hole and see what's going to do. So you can have some elements. You go, I'm going to go back and flick a switch, basically, or poke someone in the bum. Or
yeah, well, that's when I mainly think about going back in time. It's usually to have sex with hot people that are dead now, or like, you know, Stuart Lee. And yeah.
essentially, I mean, as a sexual being.
But with yeah, like back when I was in my 20s.
But I mean, for him, when he was sexy.
But before you were my friend and not him. Yeah. Okay. And like, if it's just the finger, then I just have to like sort of, I don't really want to finger those men.
If you could.
The tit seems a better idea, but talcum powder causes cancer.
Yeah.
So I feel that I would have quite a cancerous tit.
Yes.
Which I've done relatively well to avoid so far.
Yeah. I think a finger travelling through time would probably cause cancer as well.
Can I have a tit that travels through time?
Yeah, have a tit that travels through time.
Then I could throw the tit at Gene Kelly and it would be... Like, there would be some vague sexual pleasure in that for me.
It would be Gene Kelly that would get the tit?
Gene Kelly's the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, it was. It was quite an interesting choice. If you could go through history and have sex with anyone from history, who would it be? Would it be Gene Kelly?
Or in their prime? You know, Stuart Lee from the early 90s.
Yeah.
No. Gene Kelly, yeah.
Yeah.
Or was it Gene Kelly? I'm trying to think of a way to make this entertaining, but now I'm just hot for Gene Kelly.
That was just interesting.
But he's hot. Like, it would be interesting with somebody interesting. But Gene Kelly is very linearly hot.
You could have sex with Tutankhamun.
No, because he's all... They used to like, have leeches and they shaved their whole bodies. And I don't like slippery men.
Could have sex with... trying to think who I'd have sex with.
Who do you want to pimp me out to?
Well...
Historically.
There must be some good choices out there to have sex with. King Henry VIII, he'd be good to have sex with, wouldn't he?
Well, syphilitic and mental. Yeah, no,
We got the cure for syphilis now, but you're going back with a bit of syphilis.
No, he wasn't even hot.
No, he wasn't. Well, he was when he was young and he played by that guy. What's his name, that guy who played King Henry VIII and was sexy?
Oh, the guy with the three names?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
I don't find him... So you're thinking of who you find attractive. These are not people who I find attractive.
Well, you know...
With me, it's pretty much just Gene Kelly.
Okay.
And... Yeah, I can't think of anybody else.
That's fine. Gene Kelly's a fine answer. If you could go... If all the museums and art galleries in the world got together and said, Meryl, we love you, you can have one thing from all of our museums or art galleries and keep it, what would you choose to possess? And it can be a painting, it can be an artefact, anything.
My favourite thing in any art gallery is the Gnidon Aphrodite, who is in the Louvre. And she's right opposite the Venus de Milo. So everybody goes to look at the Venus de Milo or Milo or whatever it is. But, I mean, it doesn't even... Because it's a Greek statue, but we call it by the Roman names. It's a Roman... Like, it's shit. It's literally a Roman copy of some Greek statue. And it's become really famous for no reason, just because everybody keeps being told it's beautiful.
Because the arms came off.
Yeah, which I think is a bit sinister. Yeah. I think that's why people like it, because she can't defend herself.
Yeah.
But it's also... It's one of those things that we've been told it's beautiful, so we believe it, a bit like Daniel Craig. You know? Because I remember our friends in the North, Daniel Craig was playing somebody ugly, and now apparently Daniel Craig is hot. It's the same face.
Yeah.
It's just publicity. But the Gnidon Aphrodite, she's actually the Aphrodite from Gnidos, and she was said that if you were a very devoted follower, she would come alive and have sex with you at midnight.
Right.
And she has no head or arms or legs anymore. But it's actually, and you can get so close, like you can breathe the marble in. So I would like to have her at home and sort of cherish her. And I was saying this to my daughter, like, I wish I could give her the attention she deserves. But she's saying, well, she's not going to get that in an ex-council house in Streatham Hill. but so maybe I would put her on display. But I live near the South Circular, which is very congested, so she'd get a lot of footfall that way.
Yeah, okay, that's good thinking.
She's got a huge Mons pubis, which they found very sexy back then. Really, it's huge. It looks like a football helmet.
It's a mountain, isn't it? It's a mountain, it's a pubic mountain, so it should be big.
Okay.
What have you got coming up in the future?
The next up show is remaining streaming, so I'm mainly directing people to watching Vanilla on that, and the more people that watch it, I get some money. But actually, it's a bit...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Of a journey of adventure at the moment. I've just been taken on by a new agent. And I mean, one of the things about my career is in 20 odd years, I have, this is my fourth agent, but that I've had agents for 1 year. Like one of them really tried, but the other two just took me on and then never spoke to me again. And this agent is actually getting me work. So I don't know what's happening. And that's actually really exciting. And it's it almost feels a bit like an illness because after this long, like part of me is like why haven't I given up? But there's always a new beginning. So, yeah, we're just seeing what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm writing a play. I'm writing a play with Young Vic, but that's because we don't know when it'll be staged. But I'm writing a play about the Holocaust, surprise, surprise.
Cool.
About my mum being in an internment camp when she came over, which will have bits about Carmen Miranda and suicide. So there we go. Okay. It's my usual USP. Bit of nonsense, bit of dark shit.
It is. Well, it's a fascinating show, Vanilla, so do watch that. And, you know, I think I feel this in the next 20 years, I think it's going to happen for you. I think if you just can stick it out. I think the older you get, the better it's going to get.
My material is mainly about wanking.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, in 70s, audiences will just have to, like, vomit.
An 80-year-old woman. It's like McCartney at Glastonbury. An 80-year-old woman talking about wanking.
Yeah. I'm sure 80-year-olds still wank.
It'll have come round, and by that time, with cum all over your tits as an 80-year-old, things will be so...
There's a 92-year-old porn star who I've watched, and she just looks really bored. Like, people go, oh, it must be upsetting. It's not upsetting, she just looks really fucking bored with it all. It's like, do I have to keep sucking this cock? It's really like, oh, she just sighs, oh, God. Like, another day at the office. So, yeah. Maybe that'll be me.
We learn so many different things from you, Beryl. That's what. It's such a smorgasbord. You never know where it's going to go. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause. It's Meryl O'Rourke. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Meryl O'Rourke. Thank you to Scamp Regard. Great music, guys. Keep it up. I love what you're doing. Thank you also. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, to George the Incompetent Soundman, and Chris Evans, not that one, for all the work he does behind the scenes. Thank you to everyone at the Phoenix for everything you've done for us. And this is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.